It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Sad news today. An attack on the Abbey Gate in Kabul at the airport. A 13th service member has died in the attack from the wounds suffered during the attack. 18 more have been injured. That's what's being reported. Something like 90 Afghans were harmed. A horrible day. A truly horrible day, and a reminder of what war is. And yeah, we're getting out, and thank goodness we're getting out. But this is what happens. And this was sadly predictable. And what was equally predictable, and this is what's most disgraceful in these moments, are those people who are all tingly in the panties to attack President Biden over the dead bodies of our nation's soldiers. Could there be anything more un-American? Now, these are people who claim to be uber patriots. These are the folks who wave the flag and stand for the national anthem. And yet today, they're using the not yet cold corpses of our soldiers to further their agendas. Disgraceful, despicable, and un-American. You know, it used to be when horrible things like this happened, and look, I guess I'm old enough to remember, I did not vote for George W. Bush, didn't particularly like George W. Bush, but when 9/11 happened, all that was aside. You put that stuff aside. It used to be that, you know, when we put our disagreements aside, this stuff stopped at the water's edge. And yet, all I saw today were, a bunch of crack-addled mice running around nipping to find their little bit of victory. And look, this is going to turn around and this is going to bite them. This is going to turn around and this the Republican Party was gleeful almost today. And and the thing that gets me is, you know, and I spent a good bit of time on social media to kind of, I was trying to get the latest information coming out and find out what's going on. Because sadly, some sources on social media are better than our mainstream media. But I kept seeing these talking heads, these pundits, all of them pointing their finger at Joe Biden. This is Joe Biden's fault. I'll tell you right now. I hope our military, and look, I'm not somebody who's a warmonger. I hope our military right now is bombing the hell out of ISIS in their strongholds. And for those who don't know, the Taliban who is taking over Afghanistan and ISIS are two different entities who will be fighting each other. And ISIS wanted to cause this moment. They wanted this moment. Now, I give Joe Biden credit. I watched his speech today. He showed what a leader is. He showed what a leader does. He stepped forward and he said, I bear responsibility. Now, of course, it was a Fox News reporter going, is this your fault? And he said, look, I bear responsibility for fundamentally all that's happened of late. The buck stops there. And I'll tell you, in this moment, I looked at Joe Biden, somebody who showed empathy, somebody who showed compassion, someone who truthfully understands what it's like to have to deal with these situations. Showed the face of a nation in mourning, but resolve. and said, look, we're going to hunt you down. We will find who did this. And it was one of these moments where I'm going, you know, had we someone with that mindset, you know, had George W. Bush taken that mindset that we're going to go get who was responsible, and we had Bin Laden, for all reports that we had him and let him go, had they taken him out at Tora Bora, we'd have never been in Afghanistan. And it's one of the things that I think you know, Joe Biden was absolutely right about in his speech, that if this would have been any other country, we wouldn't have gone in. We wouldn't have been there for 20 years. I mean, stop and think about that. You know, I was looking at some of the numbers, and some of the numbers are half the people in this country of Afghanistan have never known Taliban rule. They've only known the U.S. being in control there. Half the country. I mean, you look at the fact that we've gotten, in just the last several weeks, over 100,000 people out. I'll tell you, this is a major undertaking and success story. But I look at the tragedy of today, and this is what's going to be remembered. I look at this day and I go, how dare someone use this as an attack line? We should be in this moment resolved to one, getting out of there, because overwhelmingly the American people want out. Now, there are going to be those, the war hawks, the warmongers, the lobbyists for the big defense contractors who are going to say, this is why we shouldn't leave. We should stay. We should take them both on. We're going to take both ISIS and the Taliban on. And we should do it alone. Because, again, the military that we built for the last 20 years collapsed in, what, 11 days? Surrendered in, what, 11 days? Now, I had somebody, you know, come at me today and say, well, you know, you're surrendering. You're going to lose the war. We didn't lose. We didn't lose anything. The objective, and I guess I'm old enough to remember what the objective was, because I was all in favor of it. Go get Bin Laden. Go get the guy who was the mastermind behind 9/11. Go get the guy who was behind the embassy bombings and the bombing of the coal and all of the things that they were doing. Go get them. Break that up. That's it. Never wanted to be somewhere 20 years and try and rebuild a nation. And President Biden talked about this. You were never going to bring democracy as we know it anywhere near Afghanistan. As he pointed out, there have been tribal leaders and tribes there fighting and warring for thousands of years. How arrogant of us to think that we could change that. How arrogant of us if we just stayed a little longer. And look, there are voices out there right now who are going to use this tragedy today as the springboard to go, no, we need to stay longer and we need to sacrifice more young men. I was reading some of the comments on social media today, and someone asked the question that I always ask when someone's killed in a war. Do you think they were someone's child who was, oh, I don't know, in our 1%, in our top 5%? Do you think one of those killed in this attack were someone who was, you know, in the top 10% economically? The answer is no. We know who our soldiers are. They're the poor and the working class. That's how it's always been. And for me, when I look at a day like today, I go back and I think of Smedley Butler's War as a Racket and the lives that were lost and the treasure that was spent and the opportunities missed. Also, we could have more rich people, more corporate special interests, more defense contracts. And yeah, it does trickle down to us a little bit. We get jobs out of it. But we have to send our children off to die somewhere. And I'm sorry, I'm not going there. Now, do I think we should be finding who did this? Yeah. But there are ways of doing that without sending 100,000 working class kids into the desert. The thing that bothers me here, and I keep coming back to this in this moment. You look at the voices out there who are pointing their finger at President Biden. You look at the people who are full-throatedly attacking, saying he's the blame. It's all his responsibility. Had we been out of here on May 1st, things would have been different. And you go, you wouldn't have gotten people out by May 1st. Evidently, you don't understand logistics. And here's the thing, and this is where I have some hope. Those people who were quite gleeful over today's events, happy to go on to the social medias and proclaim their superiority and point their finger at Joe Biden, they were met with some stern pushback. They were met by people who were saying, "What is wrong with you?" And I'm hopeful that, you know, in these moments, we put down our swords, we put down our divisions, and we mourn our dead, and we move forward. And we get out of there. For me, it's that simple. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Also today, something interesting happened. A group of seven Capitol policemen. And I've actually been waiting for this. I've been waiting for somebody on our insurrection day, when our domestic terrorists, when our local ISIS or Taliban or Al-Qaeda or three percenters or whatever you want to call them, get finally drug into court. You have this group of seven Capitol police officers who have filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump, the former guy, and I guess nearly 20 of the extremists on the right. You know, the people who planned January 6th, the people who were behind it, the people who funded it. The suit implicates the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, people like Roger Stone, the Legal Brain Trust. And I got to think in this, you got to go after some billionaires. The people who funded this nightmare. And what's interesting to me, and I look at this suit, and I'm hoping the discovery phase is public. I'm hoping we get to see everything out in front, and I hope every one of these people are put into bankruptcy and sued till the cows come home. And then maybe we can give them some deworming medication so they don't get COVID. But I'm hoping in the discovery phase, we find out who was behind what and where the money came from. But the thing that really bothers me is the very same people who were the Stop the Steal folks, the very same people who were out there waving the flags and beating our policemen with flagpoles with the American flag on it, and worse yet, the Blue Lives Matter flag. They seem to be the same people who right now, the same unpatriotic people who right now are attacking Joe Biden. The same ones who are, for what happened today, wanting to move on impeachment. And you go, really? Is this what you've been waiting for? And the answer is, yeah, this is what they've been holding their breath for. They've wanted a tragedy. They've wanted a catastrophe. They've wanted something bad to happen so that they could have their moment. And the worst thing about this is there are some people who are now saying that we should derail the whole agenda, stop the infrastructure improvements, stop the voting rights bill from moving, stop the entire agenda. And understand, this is the Republican game plan. This is their MO. This is This is what they do. And they do it masterfully. You have to give them credit. They're well-organized, well-funded. But I think on this one, I think they've overstepped. Because I think the American people, especially with Joe Biden today coming out and saying, look, the buck stops with me. I'm ultimately responsible. And I take on that responsibility. And we're going to make this right. We're going to get the people who did this. But we're still getting out. This isn't a moment where we go, no. U-turn. We're going back. Kind of makes you wonder the objectives of some. Now, as I said, I'm hoping with this lawsuit, I'm hoping that we hold the former guy accountable on some level, because I'm almost losing hope on a certain level with Congress moving way too slow with the hearing process. And I guess there's a second one coming up very soon. But this is something we should have moved on a long time ago. We should have been moving on this. We should have been subpoenaing people. We should have been having these hearings all along. We should have been having testimony all along. And I know, Rick, you're being impatient. I believe in speedy justice. I believe in people being held accountable. Especially the people who on January 6th attacked our country, and the people who today attacked our country. But like I said, this isn't me going, oh hey, let's send 140,000 troops into Afghanistan and start this nightmare over. It's time for us to go. It's time for them to move in their direction, wherever that's going to lead them. And we've got to get out, and the people who have helped us, we owe a responsibility to. We owe a debt to help them find somewhere where they're not going to be murdered. To help them find somewhere where they're going to be rewarded for helping us, not left behind, not left out. And anyone who says, no, screw those people, I'm sorry, you're not an American. You're certainly not patriotic. And you're a disgrace. And sadly, a lot of you know who you are. I'd like to hear your thoughts. If you email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com, I do answer all emails personally. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, and talk a little bit about education and schools. Back after this. American than workers standing up, and the union gives a voice to win. On the Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1922. That was the day 1,300 workers from four railroad brotherhoods walked off the job in Joliet, Illinois, near Chicago. The walkout threatened to paralyze freight service for steel mills in nearby Gary and other regional industries. 400,000 railroad shopmen had been on strike across the country for nearly 7 weeks. Newspaper headlines that day warned a general strike of 2 million trademen loomed on the horizon. Brotherhood leaders promised sympathy strikes in response to threats made against their members by troops on duty at railroad centers and yards. There were also real concerns about the health and safety of trainmen, given rolling stock was no longer being maintained. In Joliet, workers stayed away under threats from troops. Additionally, Illinois Central trainmen faced threats from striking miners throughout Kentucky and Illinois who warned, "Stop transporting non-union coal or suffer the consequences." Resentment had been building up against state guard troops stationed in Illinois yards. Earlier in the week, striking shopmen had engaged in a fatal confrontation with Joliet sheriffs that left a striker and a railroad detective dead and scores injured. Riot orders were called when authorities sought to arrest striking shopmen who had stormed the home of a scab. Brotherhood workers refused to return to work unless the troops were removed. Warren Stone, president of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers, stated, quote, "We are not going to have our men shot up or beaten up or threatened by armed guards at railroad shops and yards. When the men cannot go to work without having irresponsible armed guards endangering their lives, they may go home and stay there. There will be 100 more cases
soon if conditions are not changed.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So here's an interesting little tidbit. Iceland. And I know, Iceland. Evidently, 90% of the citizens in Iceland are vaccinated. They actually see it as their civic duty, their responsibility to their country to go and get vaccinated so that they can, have an economy, have kids get to go to school, not overtax their healthcare system, not burden doctors and nurses and caregivers, and maybe try and get beyond this nightmare. If Iceland can do it, if freaking Iceland can do it, what's wrong with us? Now, a friend of mine, one of our producers here, he just told me that in Ohio, they're canceling the local high school football game. That's a big thing. You've got 12,000 kids in Florida who've tested positive for COVID. We're going in all the wrong directions. And here to share some thoughts on just where we are, where we're going, and if we ever get out of this nightmare, I've asked our good friend Sari Beth Rosenberg to come talk with us. Sari is a senior education advisor for Voters of Tomorrow. Sari, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me tonight. Great to see you.
So I'm looking at Iceland. I'm going, why can't we be Iceland?
At first, I thought you said Islip, and I said, that's close to me. Maybe I'll move there. But of course not. It's Iceland. Yes, of course.
Yeah, a whole other country.
Yeah, I got excited. I was like, oh, I think that's only an hour for me. Didn't make any sense, actually.
But they seem to be able to get it. You know, maybe Trump could have tried to buy them instead of Greenland.
Right. I think that's what he thought he was buying anyway. So we all would have won or something like that.
So again, I come back to this, and I look at a country like Iceland, who hasn't had a death since May, because everyone is vaccinated, or 90%. And I go, you know, what is it about us? What is it about the education system of their country compared to ours, where 90% see it as a civic responsibility, and yet here we've got so many dimwits and knuckleheads running around going, it's my freedom not to wear a mask. What's wrong?
I don't even know where to start, because a year ago when we talked about this, it was pretty bad, but we didn't have a vaccine. We didn't fully know the science yet, or at least, well, the science wasn't fully explained to us yet. They were still doing deep cleanings and not accepting the fact that it was airborne, even though the former guy knew it was airborne back in like February, right?
Right.
But here we are. We know exactly how this thing spreads. We also know that the vaccine is what keeps you from dying. We also know that masks work. I mean, your listeners and viewers know exactly what needs to be done. So I don't need to list it all. And you look at these school plans, and I got really angry today because I'm looking at this and thinking, wait a second, are we trying to help COVID spread, or are we trying to stop the spread of it? Because if you look at some of these plans, it's as if we just discovered that this thing was airborne and that it is now and kids aren't even vaccinated under 12. It's just, it's out of control, all of it.
And look, the numbers are laying some of this stuff out. I mean, Florida, who, you know, they don't have a mask mandate. It's voluntary, I guess, in a lot of places, even though some school districts, and good on them, are defying the governor and actually saying, look, we're going to do what we can to protect our kids. But the numbers are exploding. Tennessee, the numbers are exploding. These southern states are just riddled with this at this point, and it's going to get worse before it gets any better, because we haven't even gotten to the period where it's supposed to get bad.
Right. We haven't even, there's some talk that it's possibly peaking, but no one knows yet. We won't know that it's peaked until we start seeing a downslide. So right now it's like peak Delta variant spreading. Kids are getting sent into schools. There's too many people pretending that this is not real still. And I'm excited to go back, but I'm also really terrified. I'm not going to lie. And it's from, I think, you know, it's from, of course, I think that I'm going to have a more vaccinated population. But as we know, the Delta variant, you know, doesn't pay attention to that vaccine. And you can get sick. So I'm happy that we have this booster coming. I think most teachers got the vaccine about, it'll be 6 months soon. But I will say that I hope, you know, that the Delta variant is the last of it and we get through this. But it's look, I hate being all doom scrolling on Twitter and with all the, I'm sick of the doom and gloom, but that's why we're in this situation, because people got sick of it and they listened to what they wanted to hear. And I really my biggest fear right now is that we're all going to go back into these environments and then look back and say, well, of course it wasn't safe. And of course COVID spread and we didn't listen to the science. So my advice to teachers right now is, even though none of the schools that I know of in this country have a remote option, I'm going to set everything up digitally again and have it set to go. Worst case scenario is we have to go remote, or there's definitely going to be kids, unfortunately, hopefully none that I know or not too many, but there's definitely going to be kids who are going to have to be learning from home because they're going to have to get quarantined. So this is not the quote unquote normal school year that we were all pining for back in the spring when the vaccine started getting rolled out.
But the thing that gets me is I have a number of people that I know who have said, well, you know, the kids should just get it. You know, it's like when we were kids, I'm not sure how old you are. I think I may be a little older than you are, but when I was a kid,
I'm older than I look.
I know, but I was trying.
You won't say my age.
Look, I'm not stepping on that landmine.
Let's not go there tonight.
I was not. But when I was a kid, they took you around. You got mumps, you got the measles, you got the chicken pox, you got those things because that's what they did. Now they've got vaccines for it, so kids don't have to go through it. So you've got these people who have this mentality of, hey, when I was a kid, this is what we did, and they think that this is the same thing, that they're going to be able to do the same thing, and the kids, because they're healthier and they're younger, better immune systems, that they're going to come out of it just fine. And everybody I talk to says, one, that's foolish, but two, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. If you have the ability not to get sick, why would you want to?
I have no idea, and especially your kids. I mean, why would you want your kids to get sick with something that you're seeing on the nightly news? You're seeing kids hooked up to ventilators. Why would you want to risk that? That's what I don't understand. And New York City schools just came out with just their guidelines for the school year. And I'm pushing back on it because it's like we're forgetting that the Delta variant, you can get it if you don't have the vaccine. They're forgetting that kids under 12 aren't vaccinated. And I don't see much about social distancing. I'm concerned. And so I don't know. I feel like everyone's operating under that premise that, like, oh, I guess we're just all going to get sick, forgetting that this is not just the flu.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
How many months do we need to see this for, right?
Right. But, you know, I don't hear enough teachers like you saying, no, I don't want to go. All I keep seeing the media focused on are these wine heads who are going, no, I'm not going to cover up with a mask. And no, I'm going to be brave for my students. I'll quit if I have to. And these numbskulls, who good, quit. I don't want you in a classroom. If this is how you see things, don't want you in a classroom.
You should be educating people. If A, you have read all about you're still doing your research on the vaccine, even though people have already laid out that it's safe. And I also wouldn't want you teaching my kids if you are against wearing a mask. It's that's not who I would want educating my kids right now.
Here's the weird thing, and I love some of the memes that are out there. You know, one of them that I thought most interesting was, you know, you have all these parents who are showing up at these school board meetings who just a year ago was complaining that they couldn't help their fifth grader with the new math. Now they're all epidemiologists and, you know, because they've done their research, you know, with sitting on the toilet with watching YouTube videos with their mouth open. They've done it. And
how you learn it. Yeah.
And you go, explain to me how our education system failed you again.
Right. So there was that couple month period where everyone was like so happy, so grateful and hashtag blessed for the teachers. And then it quickly turned into just like, go back in there and do not wear a mask around my kid. And don't make my kid not wear a mask, because my favorite was that woman wearing glasses, which I don't think God intended for her to wear under her logic, and was saying that, you know, young people's faces were meant to be seen as God made them. I mean, it's just, you start, I guess I'm long past that phase of wondering if I'm being punked every day, but it's, the ignorance is just, out of control. And it's fine, be ignorant, but you're getting people sick and killing people with your own ignorance. And that's where my anger kicks in.
Yeah, and but here's the other part of this. And I'm looking at states across the country that are really struggling with this. And they happen to be all southern states. The top nine states in the numbers of cases per 100,000 are all southern states. And there's part of me, and this is bad for my soul, but there's part of me that doesn't care. And I hate feeling like that because yeah. I'm going, you know, I know that the people who are on the ventilators, because the numbers are there, overwhelmingly are people who decided, no, I'm not going to do it. You all are sheep for getting it. I'm not going to be metallic. I'll drink the Clorox and, you know, shove the light, you know where.
And I'll deworm myself, even though there, I don't have any worms in me.
But... yeah, I mean, this is, I struggle with this. I mean, I think it's bad for my soul to not care if these people live or die, but this is kind of where I'm at.
I get it. And, you know, I like to celebrate myself as a highly empathetic person. That's why I went into teaching. You know, I feel people's pain a little too much, but I will say I draw the line where I walked here in New York City. I walked by an anti-vax rally on Saturday. They were protesting the Central Park concert, not for the reasons that other people were considering a super spreader event. They were protesting because they were angry that you had to have one shot of the vaccine to get to enter the concert. You know, so this was just their opportunity to protest. And I it took a lot of willpower not to just start screaming back at them, because it's just like they were holding babies in the crowd, and they were holding up all these signs, you know, my body, my choice. And it's just, I do, again, wish I was just getting punked by like a lot of people, but they feel really passionate about.
I mean, it's weird. And on one side, you got people, no, we can't do anything because super spreader event. And then the other side going, no, I want bigger super spreader events.
Spread it more. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a weird world that we live in, and I'm struggling with this. But here, I do kind of have some hope, because my kids came home from school and they've started school this week.
How did it go?
So far, so good. Fortunately, and I'm grateful that our school district has done some the best that they can do given the situation.
Right.
They are back in school. They are doing that, but they are trying to, you know, everyone's wearing the mask, doing the social distancing as they can, you know, all kinds of things that they've put into place to try and do the best they can given the situation. But my right. son comes home and goes, you know, the first couple of days anyway, I've noticed that more of my classmates are actually wearing their masks and wearing them right. And not right. complaining and doing the right things, because they understand that they're in a vulnerable position. It's the parents. It's the people who are supposed to be taking care of them who are losing their ever-loving flipping minds.
I don't understand it. It's the same parents who are going to the board meetings in the beginning of the summer, freaking out that their kids are getting taught about racism, structural racism, and never asking their kids if they care. And then now they're freaking out about the masks. And it's just like, they're going to go back to the anti-racism stuff again, you know, as soon
eventually.
Eventually, I mean, let's hope the pandemic ends and that's the next thing they want to fight. But I do find that the kids are much more compliant, and I'm going to guess one of the reasons is that they realize, my students were telling me last year when we were still doing remote school, they were like, we missed the whole like high school hallway aesthetic, because that's how Gen Z talks. And they're like, I can't wait to be in the hallway and like take photos of me in a high school hallway. I'm like, you used to hate being at school. They're like, can't wait to be back. So I think young people are going to be fine with the masks and wearing them properly, I hope, because they know how much better it is to be in person than be behind their Zoom screen again. Right.
No, and that's, I think that's an excellent point. It's something that I think needs to be pointed out. But you have parents who go, no, I'm not going to let my children be sheep and forced into this stuff. And you go, you know, it doesn't seem like the kids are having much of a problem. Now, when I was a kid, you know, I probably would have pushed back against anything just right. because. But I'm looking at this going, maybe I have a little hope that we're not completely lost, that not all is lost. Maybe the parents get knocked off and we have kids who become okay.
No, and I do. That's what I was saying the other day to someone, that somebody asked me, like, how am I so, I'm still pretty upbeat and optimistic despite my rage over a lot of what's going on right now. And I do attribute it to the fact that I work with young people. It's corny, but true, because they always find some optimism there. And I also feel, I also feel inspired by them because they're not the ones who are protesting masks and saying that they don't want to feel uncomfortable learning about racism and doing all the other crazy stuff that you see parents, their parents, some of their, not all, let's say not all parents.
The ones that are getting the media attention. So do you see us this year going back to where we were last year? I mean, is that a very, because I'm of the mindset we're not going back. We're not locking down. I don't think that's a possibility, but yeah. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I think that because of how much it would hurt our economy, I think that the forces that be will make sure that we don't. But I worry if it's going to be at the expense of public health. That's my concern. I'm hoping that I think the reason why we won't lock down would be because all the predictions about there being a Delta variant plus or Lambda, or I saw something about COVID-22 and I shut my computer screen off. I was like, I can't even hear about COVID-22 right now. I think that that's probably why we won't have lockdowns. I am concerned. I'm very concerned looking at the fact that they're putting 34 kids in a classroom. Some classrooms don't have proper ventilation still. A lot of them in city schools. I'm concerned about kids under 12. And I'm also seeing a lot of stories about schools shutting down for a day because there's not enough teachers because they're all being quarantined. So, but I'm hoping that's just a sprinkling of cases. And I'm hoping that we reach a peak with the Delta variant and and then finally, as the former guy said, it'll just disappear one day. But yeah, I agree. I don't see our leaders and elected officials doing a lockdown like they had done before, because I don't think our economy can take it, to be honest, nope. Which is kind of cynical to say, but we do. I love America, but we tend to value property over people every time.
And so. I don't think people will comply. I think you will.
That's true too.
At all. And I think it'll just make it worse. What I would prefer to have is responsible human beings, good citizens, people like, I don't know, the good folks in Iceland, who 90% of them thought, hey, it's my civic duty to go protect myself, and not just protect myself, but all of the people around me. Because while you may have freedom in Iceland, you don't have freedom to infect everybody else. Maybe a lesson for here at home. Just my thought.
It's gotten very Hobbesian. Yep. In this world of a hard time.
Very simple stuff. But Sari, yeah. I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work you do. I'd love to have you come back and share some more as this continues.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Great chatting with you tonight.
Good stuff. Our good friend, Sari Beth Rosenberg. She's a senior education advisor there with Voters of Tomorrow. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1839. That was the day that the Amistad sailed into Long Island, New York. The Amistad served as a Spanish slave ship. 53 captives, led by an enslaved rice farmer by the name of Joseph Sink, had revolted against their captors and taken control of the ship. They came from what is now Sierra Leone, Africa. They had endured the brutal Middle Passage on a Portuguese slave ship, the Tacora. They had landed in Havana, Cuba, where they were transferred to the Amistad. From there, they were supposed to sail to a Cuban sugar plantation. The transaction was illegal. Most of the major slave destinations in North and South America had outlawed bringing in newly enslaved people. But since existing slave labor was still used in these areas, the illegal slave trade continued. On July 2nd, the African captives escaped their chains and set upon their captors before they could load their guns. They killed the ship's captain. The Africans demanded to be returned to Sierra Leone. The U.S. Navy intercepted the Amistad as it sailed up the U.S. coast. The Africans were thrown into prison and charged with murder. The case garnered national attention and made it all the way to the United States Supreme Court. Former President John Quincy Adams presented the defense for the accused. The court found in favor of the Africans. 35 were returned home. The others had died while incarcerated or at sea. The Amistad became the subject of a 1997 film by Steven Spielberg. And while the Amistad became famous, it was not the only one. Similar uprisings were attempted on hundreds of slave ships during this era.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this week, I think Speaker Pelosi did something pretty remarkable. As I said, to get every Democrat on board to move forward with that $3.5 trillion investment bill and to get every Democrat on board who voted for the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, at a time when everyone was saying, no, this was all going to fall apart. You had the unmovable 9 or 10 or whatever that was who had the little spasm that the media wanted to make a big deal out of. Everybody was on board. And look, I've always said Democrats are like herding cats. She figured it out. Look, we're one step closer to getting that investment bill. We're one step closer to getting to vote for our representatives, to pick who represents us, not them to pick us. And here to share some thoughts on, well, if it was a big deal or not, I've asked David Pepper to come talk with us. David is the former chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks. Good to be back with you.
So is this a big deal? Is it a big deal that she got every Democrat on board? Since it is a Democratic priority, is this still a big deal?
It is a big deal. You know, there were clearly a few that were going a little bit crosswise, and I've seen this before. We've all seen it. She really, in the end, whatever she does behind the scenes really gets her folks in line, and I'm glad. You know, we are watching the other side just be, you know, today half of them are calling on Biden to resign or impeach. You know, we cannot afford to splinter. We've got to get some big things done in the next year if we're going to have a chance of making a case for Democrats being in charge in 22. And, you know, I know people have their own individual things they care about it, but if we had had a few Democrats screw that whole thing up, it would have been very damaging to Biden, to the House Democrats generally, to the Senate. And so I'm really glad she got the ducks in line. And you know, I just hope that people figure out the big picture here. Yeah. Which is far bigger than I think some clearly seem to understand.
Yeah. Before we move along, I got to back up a little bit because, you know, it's my view that the people who today are taking shots at Biden and almost gleeful over the death of 13 soldiers and the injuring of another 18, I find it disgraceful. I find it disgusting and wholly unpatriotic and un-American.
It's horrible. And that's why I said it this way. I mean, first of all, obviously, just horrible news today. You can see Biden himself and all he's dealt with, really, you know, really devastated by it, as we all were. And to see within hours, you know, every Republican Senate candidate in Ohio calling for impeachment, resignation. I mean, I look back to past events where we've always these were terrorists that attacked Americans. And the idea that some Americans' first response is to go after our president, and that's their instinct. It's just sick. I mean, we all remember after 9/11, you know, we rallied. That's what we do. That's what we've always done. And you know, whether it's Jim Jordan or a bunch of Senate candidates, I mean, it's just horrible to watch. And I don't want to thank them because it's what you should do. But I did appreciate there were a lot of Ohio Republicans today who did make statements that didn't mention Biden. They mentioned the troops and the sacrifice and the courage. And, you know, whether it was Rob Portman doing that or some of the congresspeople, you know, it's not something to thank them for because that's what you should do. But I appreciated that they did not go down this path of some of the real, you know, crazy right wingers who literally were stomping on the graves of these soldiers to make it into politics. Awful,
and I would argue that, you know, those are the people who were behind a lot of what happened on January 6th and are domestic terrorists. I believe a lot of them were the same voices, but I just wanted to get to that before
I agree with you totally.
We moved along because look, I think getting that John Lewis Voting Rights Act moving forward is a good thing. It's a big thing. The Senate is going to have to do something on the filibuster to get it through because we desperately need it. And I know it's a cliche. Yeah. It's been said a million times. But at the end of the day, voters are supposed to elect their representatives, not representatives pick their voters. And right now, the way things are rigged, it seems completely backwards. And in your state, the gerrymandering is probably going to hit. So first, I want to get your thoughts on the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and then I want to get into the gerrymandering that's happening in your state.
Yeah, it's desperately needed. I mean, what we're seeing around the country is just, you know, 2011 was terrible. They gerrymandered for a decade. They started suppressing the whole Obama coalition for a decade, really made it hard to win in states like Ohio. They're doing it now on steroids. And, you know, the history of this country is when states are attacking voting rights, unless the federal government steps up, they succeed. You know, there was a line a couple of months ago, well, we'll just organize around that. You can't out-organize gerrymandering. You can't out-organize the worst of suppression, and you shouldn't have to. You know, you shouldn't have to. The federal government is here to step up and protect when states attack. And, you know, there are many exceptions to the filibuster, hundreds of them. As Stacey Abrams said, you know, repeatedly, the idea that if we're going to make exceptions for all sorts of other things for the filibuster, I think protecting voting rights against states that attack them qualifies is another reason, is one other place where you need an exception to the filibuster. There isn't any good argument, common sense, rational governance argument that justifies requiring the Democrats, you know, there are two teams here. One team is attacking voting rights in almost every state in the country. The other's trying to protect voting rights. The attackers are doing it every single day. They don't care about minority votes in the states where they're attacking. They don't sit around and wait for Democrats in Ohio to say, oh, I'm okay with that attack. So the idea that you would allow that to happen at the state level, but at the federal level, somehow the Democrats have to find 10 Republicans who are on the side of those attacking to join them. Talk about, you know, what asymmetric warfare. It's absurd. And I respect the Democrats on the Senate, but there should not be one Democrat who says the filibuster should get in the way of this stuff. We're being played for fools if we let that happen.
No, I agree with you. Look, I'm a believer in getting rid of the filibuster. And if it's something that needs to be filibustered, you take to the floor and you hold the floor. Nothing else gets done.
Absolutely.
And then you explain to me why you're against whatever's moving forward. And if it's that big of a deal, then nothing gets done until we figure it out. This idea that you can filibuster something and nobody knows who did it is insane.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you look at the Texas Democrats who left the state. I mean, this is not normal politics. The attacks on voting rights, the attacks on the process of counting ballots and who counts them that we're seeing in Georgia and other states, it's all so over the top, so illegitimate that we can't act like it's sort of normal politics. And that's why, we'll just let the filibuster run like it would on any other issue. No, this is different. I mean, whatever you think of it on other issues, this is an attack at the core of these states. It will deter, it will basically rig the next decade of elections between the gerrymandering and the suppression. And the Texas Democrats getting out of Texas, you know, as a friend of mine says, if your hair's on fire, sometimes you got to act like your hair's on fire. You can't act normal if something's really bad. And those Texas Democrats said, this is really bad. And too often I watch the Senate, they're against it, but are they really fighting? Are they doing what they just did to get that infrastructure bill passed? I don't see it yet. They need to fight a lot harder. And of course the filibuster, you know, should not get in the way. And like you said, if it's going to, you make them really do it. You know, I want to see Chuck Grassley on the floor at 4 a.m. arguing for it. I don't want to make this easy. Nope. This is not normal politics.
No, I'm right there with you. But now I'm looking at your state, and you recently testified against what the Republicans in Ohio are going to do. And as I understand, they're basically holding back the big plan. Walk us through what it looks like, what is going on when they draw these maps up and how this goes, how this goes through the process.
Well, we saw 10 years ago, and we thanks to the League of Women Voters and some other groups, we got all their documents from 2011 after the fact. And they rented a private hotel room that they called the bunker. They temporarily laid off State House staff, rehired them as private contractors. The schedule that they formally wrote down literally said, hold the map, quote, in the can until the last minute. And they're doing it again right now. Basically the same leaders, the same staff. We have 5 days to go before a deadline of a map. There's no map. They're running around doing public hearings. Half of them don't show up. You know, Mike DeWine, the governor, he was at a Bengals practice. I'm a Bengals fan, so I don't mind that in one way. But he was at a Bengals practice one day, missing a bunch of the meetings. And then the next day, the meeting was in Cincinnati. He wasn't there. These are the public hearings. And everyone was, it's terrible he's not at the public hearings. And what I said in my testimony was, well, that's because that's not where this is happening. They're at the meetings where it's happening.
Right.
And they're all in private. They're all in secret. They're literally, again, their plans say, put it on a private computer. Make sure you have the key to the room. Like, it's all being done in secret. And it's absurd. And frankly, you know, some of these guys, literally, like the state auditor, he's on this commission. It's a 7-member commission. 5 Republicans, 2 Democrats based on election results. But the state auditor of Ohio has literally suggested that council members be tried as criminals when they violate the Sunshine Law, okay? This is the most public act you can take. I think the Sunshine Law should apply to every aspect of it, and they're doing it all in secret. Same people who are grandstanding against local members who screw up on the Sunshine Law. So these guys are hiding it all, and my fear is, it's going to come out with a day to go, like 10 years ago. There'll be no time. They'll ram it through. But here's the one good news. Activists in this state twice passed gerrymandering reform constitutional amendments that, unlike 10 years ago, give us some protection. If they do what I'm afraid they're going to do, there is a lawsuit that can be won. And the other big thing Ohio accomplished the last 2 elections, even when we were red, we won 3 out of 4 Supreme Court races. So like Pennsylvania, we actually have a pretty fair court. The Chief Justice is a Republican, but she's pretty independent. She voted against the last gerrymander. Now we have 3 Democratic endorsed justices too. So as ugly as it's been, I think if these guys roll the dice, and that seems to be their instinct on everything these days, but I think they take a great risk that, unlike 10 years ago, there's new strict language about not being too partisan. And there's a court that actually is independent enough that I think it'll strike down any nonsense. That's our hope, at least.
Right. So if they do strike that down, does the court then draw the maps, or they just say, go back and do it again and rejigger it however you can?
I think it'll be one of the, you know, it's, we've never been there before. So I think you'll see a back and forth. But I think overall, I think the Republicans take a real risk. You know, we're going to have 15 congressional districts. They would love to have it be 13 Republicans, 2 Democrats, even though for the last 10 years, it's been a 55-45 split in voting. I mean, Democrats should have 7 seats. In a good year, we should win 8. In a bad year, 5 or 6. They want to go for 13-2 or 12-3. And I think that would get laughed out of court. I don't think that would survive. They get a little higher, it gets closer. But I think that if I were a Republican lawyer, I'd be saying to them, guys, you don't want to, you roll the dice, you may get stuck with 6 or 7 seats by a court.
Right.
Don't be absurd. You know, Cincinnati, we have some of the, it's everywhere, but Cincinnati, where I live, split right down the middle to split all those voters up, create 2 Republican districts. Marcy Kaptur up in Lake Erie, literally there are parts, it's called the snake on the lake from Toledo to Cleveland. There's parts of that district that are impassable except with snorkel gear on. I mean, it's literally so close to the lake. There's no road. Jim Jordan's district, complete joke, from near Dayton all the way to Cleveland and Oberlin. So if they try and preserve these wild districts to create like a 12-3 map, I think it will get struck down. But the first thing is the secrecy is just so absurd. And that's what I testified on, because honestly, like, I've seen these Republicans be self-righteous over and over again about open meetings and attacking others that don't do it. And as I said at this hearing, this is the most public matter there is. And you guys have some computer in some back room run by some private contractor doing all the work. And how do we know that? It's what they did 10 years ago. And we've seen the training manuals. It's what they're told to do by the RNC.
No, it is. It's outrageous. And this is where you go, I don't even know why this is in their hands. I don't know why an elected official is anywhere near drawing those maps. I honestly don't.
This is where the For the People Act is so important. Not the John Lewis one. The way to fix this, because right now you're going to have Democratic states think Republican states will gerrymander, so Democrats are going to, like, it's a total mess. The federal government could establish a baseline of independent commissions everywhere. So we're out of this corrupt process of politicians rigging for themselves. But until there's some broader federal approach, you know, Democrats, again, you're sort of going in asymmetrical warfare if you play the good guy on gerrymandering while Ohio goes 13-2. But yeah, of course, you're completely right. If you put 10 members of the League of Women Vote, or frankly, if you took 10 college kids and gave them a computer and said, draw fair maps that accomplish certain goals of compactness and fairness, they would get it right.
Yep.
The reason these maps are so bad is because the politicians have only the wrong motives. The average citizen, not even that political, would actually figure it out easily. The computers would do all the work. The problem is, their goals are very different from what the average citizen wants to see happen. You know, both of our gerrymandering reform efforts passed more than 70-30. People are tired of the corrupt system of rigged districts. You know, 99% of the election results in Ohio for the last decade, you and I could have seen in 2011. What's the whole point of the elections if we knew what 99% of them would be? And that's exactly what happened. And that's what they'll do again if they can get away with it.
And this is why you don't get the kind of voter participation that you should have. Because if it's already rigged before you cast the first ballot, you know what? Some people, I've had people tell me this. What's the point? We already know.
Right.
It's sad stuff.
And that's why you also have legislatures like Ohio. We just hit 5,000 COVID cases today, 4,000 yesterday. School just started. What was their hearing on 2 days ago? Getting rid of all vaccines. That's what they're talking about. Why? Because they're all in little right-wing gerrymandered districts where they're worried they're going to get primaried by someone else who's even more anti-vax than they are. I mean, most people in this state, in Ohio and in the country, 70% support masks in schools. They are on the far, fringe edge legislating this stuff. And one, they believe it. But two, it's because they're living in a world where the people who win are these extremists versus sort of everyday common sense people.
No, you're spot on, which is why we've got to fight back. And I'm glad you testified. As this comes down, I'd love to have you come back and share some thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted. I think that here and everywhere, I feel like people are really in a lull right now. Like, you know, we know there's some tough things going. COVID's coming back. The Afghanistan stuff is horrible. But man, they will get this done if we don't fight as hard as we need to. Yep. That's why I showed up the other day a little pissed off.
As you
because
should be.
If we don't show some fire, if we don't go to court, if we don't pack these hearings, they will do it. I saw it 10 years ago. You remember when 10 years ago, they did it right in the middle of the Senate Bill 5 fight. So we're fighting over saving, collective bargaining. They rigged it at the same time. Yeah. No one even showed up. So we've got to keep our eye on this.
There you go. David, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. David Pepper, former chairman of the Ohio Democratic Party. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.